I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants.
Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
Whoa, and I am Jake Lode 71.
Yeah, I almost hit all of the wrong buttons. It's been a day. I just got stressed out for no apparent reason.
You know, it is a day.
Talking to people.
It's one of them days that end with Y.
And you people know who you are.
Hmm.
Bum.
Does she?
Yes, she does. No, so this is one we said we were going to do forever ago. So let's see if you remember it. The Minnesota Iceman.
Ooh, okay.
Remember this?
Vaguely.
Fathers of Cryptozoology, we kind of talked about it.
Yeah, we touched on it.
Sanderson and Hoovelman.
Yeah, that's right. They uncovered this body, and yes,
they
I do
didn't
remember.
Uncover it.
No. Well, they researched it, let's say.
Yeah.
And then some weird things happened.
Oh, gosh, man. And this is one of those convoluted, we'll talk about it in a minute. It's so convoluted.
Hmm.
I do not know what's real with this story.
Right.
Okay. Before we get into that front of house stuff, the book is selling extremely well. Thank you guys for buying your copy. If you want a copy of Living UFOs, The Ocean Above Our Heads, A Study of Atmospheric Biology, by yours truly, The Great and Powerful Mr. E, you can get it at cryptidsofcorn.com under the books tab, or you can get it on Amazon if you're international and you don't want to pay. I can ship international. It's so far, I think I'm finding most like over the ocean shipping for books is like, oh gosh, $22 around there, $22 to $25.
Yeah.
So you can get it internationally if you want. Just let me know and I'll ship it to you if you want it signed. If not, you know, Amazon's there for the international. But yeah, thank you guys for all that. Another real quick one, live shows. We have two that are, you can actively get tickets for right now.
Yes.
Come
see us live in person.
See if I can remember the dates right. April 5th in Arkansas.
Okay.
Right? In North Little Rock.
And that's with Matthew Orton.
Matthew Orton.
Matthew Orton and the Drunken Cryptids podcast.
Yep. Yeah, and that's Old Bart's. You get all the information in the link below in the description.
Yep.
And then, okay, do you remember the June one?
Yep. June, the exact date.
It's
in my calendar.
It's in June.
There's another one in June with famous author Michael Thompson.
And that one, the topic is sea monsters and UFOs.
So if you have desire to see us live in the flesh.
Now it's in Ohio, too.
Yes, that one's in our hometown in Ohio. Like I said, more information in the description box below. Please check our descriptions of all of our episodes. We hide little nuggets in there. There's some fun stuff.
There's some links to other podcasts.
It's fun. So check the descriptions. But come see us live. If you want to see us live or see us do this podcast live in person, if you got questions during it, I mean, that's what it's all about. Come see us live. Enjoy the time we can spend together.
All right. And last thing for this part is Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yes.
Love you all. Merry Christmas. Try to share some Christmas spirit with somebody else. Check on your neighbors. Bake some cookies for some, you know, just do something.
Right. Yeah. Make noodles.
Buy 500 inflatables for your front yard.
There you go.
Let your wife shoot down getting a 20-foot Yeti, which still may happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I think we should drive back over and get it.
Let's pause this real quick.
We'll be back. No, do something to bring some Christmas cheer, especially for kids back.
Yeah, they need it. We need it. The youth needs it. We need cheer and merriment in the world.
So let's talk about this. Now, I don't think I've ever... This is up there for one of the most convoluted things to research.
Okay.
This one... So, this week's research... well, for the Patreon listeners, they'll know, like the Pyro Mountain little people, mm-hmm. was super hard to research just because there's nothing on it.
Yeah.
This one's the exact opposite. It's so, so, so much. He said, she said, FBI, Smithsonian, government.
Oh, gosh.
Like,
all of our favorite characters.
Hoax and Canadian Border Patrol. Like, there is so much convolution in this story. Mm-hmm. I personally don't know what's real. I found a couple articles that I kind of smashed together that I think did a pretty good job, and I'll give credit as we go through these, because it just is a lot. Probably the best you can get is, now, there's a Bernard Heuvelman book, The Strange Saga of the Minnesota Iceman. Now, that's written by Bernard Heuvelman, which we'll talk about. Him and Ivan T. Sanders had a deep involvement in this case. Mm-hmm. So it's very skewed. And I love Bernard Heuvelman.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very skewed towards his views.
Okay.
Obviously, he wrote the book.
Right, obviously.
So, like, you read my book, it's very skewed towards my views.
Right, yeah.
So just that's one thing to understand when you start. It's very hard to find an unbiased or a chronological timeline. And there's a lot of time jumping we're going to get into.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best thing we can do after all this is let's just see where all the stories and what all the information tells us.
Including a murder investigation.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, of the Iceman?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
May just been a guy.
Oh, I don't think that, right?
In a suit?
In a suit?
Yeah.
He was wearing, the Iceman was wearing a suit?
We'll talk about what the Iceman actually is. So, this is the strange case of the Minnesota Iceman. Modern day corpse of human-like hominids preserved in a block of ice, encountered by researchers in the 1960s. Surely the zoological discovery of a century, right?
Yeah, it sounds like the movie Encino Man.
The odd bones, hairs, and sometimes said evidence of Bigfoot or other Yeti-like creatures is a far cry from the most remarkable piece of data associated with the so-called crypto-humanoids, a complete carcass of a hair-suit male hominoid, 1.5 meters tall, so just a normal, like a guy, preserved in a block of ice transported to the United States as a part of a traveling expedition by Franklin D. Hansen.
Wait, okay. So this guy was traveling around with a block of ice with a human inside.
A human-like creature. A Bigfoot.
Okay. So wait, I didn't know that part before.
We did not get involved with it when we talked about it with...
Okay.
Buckle up.
I'm buckled.
This gets convoluted.
Yes.
Putting this together confused me so bad.
Right.
Because of, like, when did this happen versus this? Did that really happen?
Yeah.
So buckle up, ask a lot of questions, because this one I don't understand.
Oh, okay.
I struggled.
I'll ask questions to keep the timeline in my head as best I can.
Good luck.
All right.
I have it written down here, and I don't know it.
So there's this dude traveling around.
Franklin D. Hansen. And he ran a little, like, a sideshow circus, but this is, like, his main thing.
Okay.
At the time, in the late 1968, the specimen was known as the Cybersowski creature.
Okay.
And you can look up depiction. I highly suggest you can look up pictures of it. You can go up depictions. It is like a Bigfoot man-esque thing. It's frozen with one arm above its head and one arm basically on its genitalia. Its face is looking forward.
Ooh, so he's self-censoring?
Well, no, you can see stuff.
Oh, okay.
You can see genitalia. It was a male. Okay. It was a boy.
Okay. Just making sure.
But you can find sketches of it, of people that said, like, basically when it was cleaned off, like the ice was cleaned off, you could see stuff better because it was in freezers that would transport.
Right.
Yeah.
Which ain't cheap to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to be interesting.
The specimen is brought to the attention. So this thing traveled all over the country, right? And thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people had seen it, all this stuff.
I'm already sketched out.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't have a hard opinion on this story.
Okay, but keep going.
So the specimen was brought to the attention of the famous cryptozoologist Ivan T. Sanderson and Bernard Heuvelman, which if you haven't listened to our Fathers of Cryptozoology, those are the guys.
Yeah.
They actually
figures.
Pretty much coined the term for both. They were both zoologists or naturalists. But yeah. So this was brought to the attention of these two guys by an aspiring naturalist, Terry Cullen.
Okay.
So Terry Cullen had seen this at a sideshow, reached out to both Ivan T. Sanderson and Hoovelman, and was like, hey, I really think there's something special here.
Yeah, you guys got
to
see this.
At least want you guys to come out and, like, you got to look at this.
Yeah.
Cullen had observed the carcass at the International Livestock Expedition Annual Fair in Chicago.
Oh, no.
Which, okay, back in the 60s, was a lot more fun.
Oh, I bet.
It was because they had all kinds of crazy stuff. Like a dead Bigfoot on display.
Right, in a block of ice, yeah.
You know, when people who said, you know, there was no such thing as Bigfoot before Patty.
Right, yeah. What about this thing?
They had a dead Bigfoot on display.
Oh, at the
the International Livestock Exposition. Okay. So, Henson claimed that he was the only the temporary ward of the body, and that it belonged to an undisclosed owner.
Smithsonian.
No, so they get involved.
Oh, that's not till later.
That's not. There's a lot of guns involved in this story.
Okay.
And a murder trial.
Okay, that's not good.
So basically, when Henson was approached, it's like, no, I don't own this. I'm the ward of it. I'm taking care of it while it's on the road. It's owned by a secret person. Hmm. That doesn't want to be known. Why are they rumored to be the actor Jimmy Stewart?
Jimmy Stewart.
Keep in the 60s.
Do I know who that is?
I don't know who it is.
I'm going to look him up while you're reading.
You go ahead. At one time, though, Henson claimed that the body had been discovered. Now, okay, I'll let you look up who Jimmy Stewart is.
Yeah.
Because this is where it really gets convoluted about where this thing came from.
Okay.
I just want you to take some guesses. You don't know who Jimmy Stewart is still? 1960s actor.
He's an actor. I just don't recognize him in a bunch of black and white films. He's in It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay. I've seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay. I think my grandma watches that.
A lot of people that did musicals in high school watch It's a Wonderful Life.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. So you meet this guy at the Chicago International Livestock Expedition, whatever fair I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a Bigfoot in a plug-in freezer.
Right,
like, yeah, a massive freezer with a whole Bigfoot frozen in it.
Okay.
Or a Neanderthal, or it was, okay,
something. A hairy hominid.
Yeah, a guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like a guy with hair.
Okay.
Okay. Where, what, how do you think he came into possession?
How this guy, or how the actor?
How do you think the body of this Bigfoot ended up in a cooler, in an ice chest?
Well, they would have had to have dig it up already frozen, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. It's a good guess.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where the story gets incredibly insane.
Okay.
Okay, and we could devote whole mass periods of time on each one of these things. So Henson first claimed that the body was discovered floating in a block of ice off the Siberian coast by Russian seal hunters.
Mm, okay.
First thing. Basically, and that's, now that sounds kind of weird. Other animals have been found in that. We've talked about that on several other shows. Where I think it was the Trunco episode, that one monster that was very similar to Trunco in Alaska was discovered frozen in a block of sea ice. They thawed it, ate it, said it tastes like horse.
Right, yes, I do remember that.
Several other animals have been found in, not the permafrost, but basically sea ice. They die near the coast or they die in the sea and they get frozen up in ice because they float for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not incredibly weird, especially for a mammal. That seems to be more mammal things that end up because we're you know, big enough bodies to bloat.
And then the hair quickly gathers ice on it, which multiplies very fast.
So that's first story.
Okay.
You think he didn't stick with that story very long.
Okay. That's all.
Later, he said, a Japanese whaling ship had found the body just floating out at sea.
Okay, so it's changed. That's not a good sign.
A little bit. It's just so. Later still, he had claimed that it had been found in a deep freezer facility in Hong Kong.
So it changed again.
Yeah.
Really not a good sign.
And there's about a dozen more.
So
including either, a murder.
So either he lied off the beginning where it came from, or he's constantly lying about all of them.
So his statements led the criticism and charges of hoax, which typically come from, because it doesn't stick to the same story. Henson reported the claim that the real frozen creature, okay. So he then started claiming that the creature in the block was fake. He had the real one in a different freezer at an undisclosed location. We'll get into why later.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of twists, a tangled web we weave in this story, huh?
So he claims all this stuff. Later then, he claims that it was the animal had been shot on a hunting trip in the Whiteface Reservation in Minnesota.
Okay. I don't believe him.
That they just had shot this thing in the head.
And then they froze it.
And then they froze it. For all these suggestions, most popular idea was the body's origin was collected in Vietnam.
So another place.
And flown to the United States in a body bag.
Okay. A lot of claims here.
So, seal hunters.
From Russia.
From Russia. Had found it floating in a block of ice.
To whale hunters.
Whalers discovering a body floating out in the ocean.
The Chinese.
The Hong Kong deep freeze facility that just had it in the basement.
The Yeren.
I mean, we've got five different types of Bigfoot already. Like,
right, yeah.
To, it had been shot in Minnesota.
Right.
Which is the Minnesota Iceman.
But you ain't done yet. Two.
Oh, we'll get there.
It's in Vietnam.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Vietnam.
Yeah.
That the body, and so, like a rock ape.
Yeah.
This is a Vietnam, you know, Vietnamese rock ape that was successfully killed and flown back.
That's the most believable out of all of them.
But the problem is with this, and we've talked about this with all kinds of encounters and all kinds of stuff, the story keeps changing.
That's not good for truth.
Now, it depends on if Henson was really the person that was in control of this.
Okay.
Or if it was the, like Jimmy Stewart or somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, that was just be. Every time he would be like, you know, I lied to you about that. Here's where it actually came from.
Yeah.
I don't know. It gets so convoluted. We can go down.
Either way, it sounds like somebody's lying.
Yeah.
In my professional opinion.
So they collected in Vietnam and flown to the United States on body bag. Hoovelman connected it with a story of a huge ape killed in Dengue, Vietnam in 1966, supposedly close to where Hansen had described the station during the war.
Okay.
So now then it was actually, so Henson had been described being stationed during the war, then he had it sent back and all of that.
Gotcha.
But Hoovelman had found a story that right
fit,
there.
That fit it.
That were a huge ape, like creature, had been killed and flown back.
Mm-hmm. So it fit the MO.
So finally one stuck.
So he's sticking with this story.
No, but we're going to go on. So Sanderson and Hoovelman then. Okay.
Well, okay. Oh, well, real quick. It was Hoovelman, the one changing the story over and over, right?
No.
Okay, then who was it?
Henson.
Henson, that's right.
The guy that owned it didn't own it.
Okay. Oh, okay, that guy. Okay.
The guy, the middleman.
The middleman, yes.
The guy that was running
Franklin.
The side. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, same page. Now we're good.
No, so this is kind of, that was all before Hoovelman and Sanderson really got involved.
Okay.
And this is, if anybody doesn't know, this is the axe in these guys' career for a long time.
What do you mean by that?
We'll get to it.
I don't know what you mean by the axe.
Like an axe to the back of the head for a career. Not good.
Oh, so the end of their
Minnesota
career.
Iceman is not good.
Okay, that makes more sense.
All right. Ready to continue?
Yes.
Sanderson and Hoovelman examined the Iceman in December of 1968 at Henson's home, where he was being stored off show for the winter. So he had like this facility to build to keep it frozen in the winter. Because they wouldn't do the traveling circus in the winter.
Right, off season.
Both became convinced of its reality so much that they prepared a detailed illustration and planned to have the creature described in the technical literature.
Mm.
So they're getting actually ready to classify this as a species.
Mm-hmm.
That it looks so real, looks so good, that these zoologists are ready to stake, you know, to stake everything on this.
Put it in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I said something earlier. That Henson claimed later that he had a fake one that he would take on shows and a right. real one stored at a secret facility.
Right.
Okay. Death Odd. Threats. Well, some agencies get involved, which made some vague threats.
Okay.
So, yeah, they showed all this. Their Hoovelman and Sanderson are showed this thing that they really believe is a real creature. The body was said to be robust, a barrel-chested male with a thick, thick neck. Large hands and extremely large feet. Its face was broad, flattened, and possessed a short upturned nose and a prominent brow ridge. So, what do you think so far?
Bigfoot. It's definitely Bigfooty.
You think Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's hitting all the boxes.
Just a man?
I mean, perhaps, but it's also hitting Bigfoot.
At this time, an eyeball dangled from one of the sockets. Apparently results from the gunshot to the back of the head that killed the beast.
Okay. Well, if it's Bigfoot, I don't believe that.
Depends on which type of Bigfoot, right?
Still don't believe it.
But, you know, you could see a like an eyeball with the optic nerves.
Hanging.
Yeah. Mm. And it depends heavily on when you've seen it. So the case, we'll get into like rotted a little. Anyways.
Wasn't it in ice, though? Suspended or not? What?
It was in like a block of ice, but they would clear the top and they'd take a case, basically a travel freezer with a glass top so you could look at it.
Yeah.
But depending on how well the ice was cleaned off, the layer, is to how well you could see it.
Okay.
So after like a day of it, you know, it would start getting like thicker, like not thicker ice. It would start getting less clear.
Right. So if someone shot it in the head, first of all, then guarantees the stories of, well, the Russian one, the Japanese one, and maybe the Chinese one. I guess I can't discount that one, but they didn't find it just dead floating in the ocean.
Yeah. So the dingo eyeball out of one of the sockets, apparently a result of a gunshot to the back of the head, and the bend in the forearm was interpreted as evidence of a fractured radius in the enormous arm. No, I'm sorry, a fractured radius and ulna.
Okay.
So that is the two bones at the end.
Yes.
It has a weird, so the arm that's above the head has a weird bend in it, like an extra bend. And okay. They interpreted it as it had both those bones were broken. When it was frozen.
Okay.
Like it had a floppy arm, essentially.
Did they x-ray it or something?
No, that's how they interpreted it. It looked like a fracture.
Oh, okay. Understood.
Like a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. What Sanderson and Hoovelman were intrigued by the enormous hands. Its thumb was slender, tapered, and long. And the nails were flat, yellow, and of the appearance of almost looking manicured, Sanderson had said. So I don't know
what to take from
well kept, but right. Huge and thick.
Yeah.
And the heel pad was present at the palm of the outer side, a feature suggested to Sanderson that indicated the habitable quadrupedal behavior.
Oh, on the hands?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Sanderson felt that this whatever thing would this have was. Been comfortable bipedal and quadrupedal.
Well,
that's modern day Bigfoot stuff where, mm-hmm. you know, they talk about Bigfoot going flat on all fours.
Yep.
And even spider crawling and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he was describing that. Its pads on its hand, Sanderson is, not Hoovelman.
Right.
I'm going to try to do my best to
keep them separated. Because
this is the thing that separated them.
Yeah.
This is the story that broke their partnership.
Okay.
Roughly. You know, they were already kind of going different directions.
This is the fork in their road.
Yeah. They were already kind of going different directions mm-hmm. with stuff. And this is the big case that kind of cracked their,
gotcha.
Not their friendship, but their professional
relations. Right, yeah. Set them on their own separate paths.
But Sanderson was describing it as almost being like that of a big cat, this pad, which was similar to the feet. So he was saying if it's, you know, basically it's the same thing on the feet.
Then there must be walking on
them. They must be using them for, you know, similar things.
What if their plot twist, Bigfoot does handstands all the time?
That's all I could think of. Feet suggested by Sanderson indicate, you know, habitable quadrupedal behavior. At one point during the examination, the glass over the case cracked. They were leaning on it pretty hard.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh.
Releasing an odor described as that of decomposing flesh.
So that's where I'm confused.
Remember, a freezer, and it's a misconception with people, a freezer does not stop decomposition.
Okay.
It slows it way, way, way down.
Right.
This thing was being transported. The generators they were using would go out all the time. So let's say it is real, right?
Yeah.
So the generators they were using the transporter all the time, it would go off and on. So it's thawing and freezing, thawing and freezing, thawing and freezing.
Rotten.
So the core of it may be building up gas. Ugh. If it's real, if there's a real body in there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think so far?
Well, personally, with all this, either the story changes tells me one of two things. One, they're lying. So that's just simple enough. They're just lying. That's why stories change. Or they acquired it in some fashion that's
very illegal way,
yeah, or somehow something happened where whatever they have they shouldn't have, and that's why the story's changing
now. Those are both, I think, at this point in the story, very valid.
Yeah,
as Canada gets involved here in a minute, this may be stolen.
But I also don't think if it's truly like a actual Bigfoot creature, I don't think it's that, because I don't think they shot one, froze it, and have it on display. I think something would have happened to them already. Not saying like government would have got involved, but I think if it was a Bigfoot, and you shot it and took the body, there, I think their family, whatever they are, would have retrieved it. Let's put it that way.
Interesting.
I don't think you would have gotten away. I just don't think you get away with it. I just don't think that's possible. But that's just my opinion. I don't know. Through our research.
Through our research.
Indeed.
All right. We're going to take a little ad break, and we'll come back.
Flavors of the Forest?
Yeah. I think Krampus has something to say about this.
Oh, no.
Are you ready?
Let's find out.
All right, guys. We'll be back in a second.
Hey, guys. I guess Merry Christmas or whatever. I am the Krampus, and I'm here to tell you that you're all horrible. I've seen you guys just treat each other wrong all year, and it's making my life a living heck. You know, the bag that I throw all you bad people in every year and beat you with sticks is only so big, and I have only so many helpers. So one thing you guys can kind of do to help alleviate each other's stress is buy your neighbor or your friend or your enemy. I really couldn't give a rat's behind who you buy it for, but get them some Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath. It's kind of like a garlic powder. Yeah, it's got like two or three ingredients. I don't understand it. I just hate you guys for how much work you're making me do. In the old country, it was so much easier. There was like 12 kids and little Timmy was the only bad one. So if you want to check this out, go to flavorsoftheforest.com/corn. Ah!
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
And we're back. And before we get back into the story with the odor being released from the casket, we're going to do our reviews and Patreon shout-outs.
New Patreon members?
Oh, we got a ton.
Oh, really? Oh, sweet.
There's a lot. There's been a lot. I do want to read the review first.
Okay.
This is from Deacon One.
Deacon One.
Title, I love the podcast. I listen to the podcast every day while I'm at work, and I love you guys. It's so informative, but yet you keep it entertaining. I've listened to all of the Freaky Faunas, and I absolutely love DW Conspiracy Shack. You guys have made me want to buy my own land, raise my own animals, and grow my own food. You guys are awesome. I can't wait to buy your book. Keep up the great work, and I hope you guys and your family are doing well.
Well, thank you.
Much love, sorry.
Thank you, Deacon.
Thank you, Deacon One.
Really appreciate that. So good. We're positive influences.
And those DW guys are different guys.
Oh, yeah, yes. They're under our umbrella. We support them majorly, and so let them record under the Crypts of the Corn LLC.
Some of these names on Patreon.
But if you leave a 5-star review, five we will read only. It on the show. And they're very much appreciated. It helps us grow immensely. And it's free. You can leave them for free.
Yeah.
And we love free stuff.
Only 5 stars.
Well, yeah, only 5.
All right. So new Patreon members real fast.
Okay.
Chewbacca.
Welcome, Chewbacca.
And yeah, no, he's a Jewish Chewbacca.
What would a Jewish Chewbacca sound like? I don't know.
I have no idea, but I got a picture of one on here.
Maybe I'll try that on the Patreon.
That'll
episode.
Be the Patreon. Yeah. Thomas Foxworthy.
And welcome, Thomas.
Big Papa.
Big Papa Pump. Welcome.
Tom Wayne.
Tom Wayne. Welcome.
Welcome, all you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for joining. Welcome to the Corn Cult. May your stay be enjoyable. Remember, take the offering. take the offering.
Chewbacca makes me laugh.
That's a pretty good name. Chewbacca.
All right. Ready? We're going again with the Iceman?
Yes.
Man, this story is just crazy. All right. We're going to hop up to Napier in 1973.
Okay.
That's a guy's name.
Quite a jump.
Yeah. Well, they were first examined in 68 and 69.
So we got
some weird stuff happens, and we'll come back. We're going to kind of hop around in the story.
Okay.
The object has been known ever since as the Minnesota Iceman. Sanderson and Hoovelman both spoke about it in the media. Sanderson making the unfortunate decision to refer to him as Bozo. Sanderson, I don't know why he did this. I think he thought it was funny to name the creature Bozo.
Okay.
All it did, the media blew up. Well,
Now
he's named the creature Bozo. This is a big joke
on us. Yeah.
This is a big joke.
Was Bozo the Clown around at this time?
I think it was before Bozo. I think Bozo the Clown was before this.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think that it was such an unfortunate thing Sanderson had done, and it just drove Hoovelman up a wall.
I can see that.
Remember when we talked about Hoovelman and Sanderson? At the time, Hoovelman was much more the hardcore zoologist, the much more flesh and blood, the extinct species, all that.
Right.
And Hoovelman was, or not Hoovelman, Sanderson was much more of the supernatural and stuff. And Hoovelman came around to that in his later in life.
Yeah.
But.
As all Bigfoot researchers do.
Kind of do, yeah. It's just the natural evolution.
It's where the path takes you if you follow it.
So with this, it just drove Hoovelman up a wall.
And Bozo the Clown was around at this time, is well established, came out in the late 40s.
So yeah, this is 20 years at, well, so 23 years later.
It does not help the reputation of this whole situation by naming it after a famous clown that's on TV.
It was
not good marketing.
So this is, like I said, this is a big nail in, you know, the relationship publicly.
Mm-hmm.
This seems oddly unhelpful given the apparent belief that it was real. Hoovelman published a paper in 1969 on the Belgium Scientific Journal. Remember, he was Belgius, okay. Belgium.
I like Belgius better.
and the scientific, identifying the new species as a human of our human genus that he named Homo pongidalis, which just basically translates roughly to ape-like man.
Okay.
Not man like ape, ape-like man.
Okay.
And which is Hoovelman, 1969. He later modified his proposal, arguing that H. parangus was a living Neanderthal.
Okay.
And he got very hard set that this was, this body in this case, the one he had seen, was a flesh and blood Neanderthal.
Okay.
Whether how it was obtained, you know, right. was argued. He, I think, pretty much was a believer that they had found it, like a dead, like in a chunk of ice, or they had found it dead.
Mm-hmm.
And was just parading it around.
Okay.
And were just changing the, like, they were just changing the story to sell tickets to see the thing.
Like the Hodag.
Yeah. Yeah, like the Hodag. Like the Hodag.
Oh, wait, no, never mind. You actually got to see this one.
You could touch this one. But this one didn't breathe fire.
I was just going to say, later on, we'll find out. Oh, the Iceman, it turned to flames.
So his idea that explored the detail in 1979 book, El Homo de Neanderthal, El Turis Vitus, co-authored by a Russian historian, economist, and crypto hominid expert, Boris Prochaktov. Basically, that's the book I read about earlier. Okay. I gave you the English title. That's mm-hmm. the Belgish title.
Gotcha.
Belgish.
The Belgish.
What
the
do
Belgish.
They speak in Belgium?
What do you speak?
What's the language of Belgium?
Belgianism?
I don't. I have no idea.
I don't know either.
So, as you can see, there's two, and this I think is a great indicator of the minds of these two men, and I think they both made several mistakes in their career. Obviously. You know, hindsight's 2020. We can look back and pick anybody's career apart.
Absolutely.
I do think they were the fathers of cryptozoology. These are the guys who were trying their best at the time with their beliefs and their what they've, you know, experienced in their life. What do you think so far about Sanderson and Hoovelman's
approach?
Yeah, to this, what they both believed was a flesh and blood carcass in mm-hmm. a cooler.
I'm with the guy, the one that didn't like it being named Bozo. So as Sanderson, Hoovelman. Or Hoovelman called it Bozo, right?
No, Sanderson called
it Bozo.
Hoovelman did not like that.
So I'm with Hoovelman on that.
Can you imagine just being like, what did you just do?
Right. Here's like this, we found this specimen that
his name's Bozo.
Connect all the dots of our human history that, you know, can really open up who we are as a species and where we came from in our path. What should we name it? Bozo.
So in my, like, just from this stuff, obviously I've never met either of these people, but just from reading a bunch about both of them, I have tons of each of their books and everything like that. Bernard was definitely a much more down-to-earth, like a scientist. He was a zoologist. You know, he was a scientist.
Okay.
They both were zoologists.
Okay.
Sanderson was much more like a fun grandpa when it came to this stuff.
Okay.
He was a little silly, a little goofy, very eccentric. And they had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, good.
But, you know, so when we talk about good and bad for cryptozoology.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Yeah, when you're the he's very fun. But when he comes out and he's like, its name's Bozo.
Right, yeah.
The last living, or the body of a Neanderthal. I hear Zoidberg sounds. I hear Zoidberg or the Three Curly. Stooges.
That's where I'm getting it.
All the time.
Yeah.
All right. So these two are, you know, they give their public opinions on it, both being real, that the body is real, at least the one they were shown was real.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes up later. The one they were shown was real.
Okay. So they think or say.
That's what they both said.
Yes.
Then we got John Napier. You're not going to like this guy.
Okay, here we go. Is this the charlatan?
No, he's a primatologist at the Smithsonian Institute of Natural History.
So he is a charlatan.
With a serious interest in crypto hominids.
Mm.
So this guy was, John Napier was the primatologist for the Smithsonian that would go out and look at crypto humanoids, hominids.
The gatekeeper.
Or the cleanup crew.
The guy that wipes it all away.
Yeah. So he took a great interest after these guys were talking about this ape man that was in a cooler.
It's like, hey.
People probably need to go take a long walk.
Yeah.
All right. So he goes up there. And so he sent some letters and he was invited to come and examine the Iceman. He became sure 100% that what the thing he was showing was a latex model.
Hmm.
Like he's like, yeah, it's fake. It's fake. Yeah. To these other two zoologists. And once again, they wanted it to be real. So there's bias in their views. They wanted it to be real.
Absolutely.
And this primatologist wanted it to be fake.
Yep.
So there's bias in both of these people's opinions.
Yep.
They all pretty much have the same degrees.
Yeah.
Like
at the end of the day, yeah.
Yeah. What we talk about with scientists all the time is it's a lot. You can find really credible people on both sides of an argument.
Right. Yeah.
So he became sure it was a latex model. Henson dodged. For what was, he had withdrawn the original genuine specimen from display, mostly from fear of being found. Okay. So Henson then said, and once again, this guy changes the story left and right, which did not help anything.
Henson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Frank? Yeah, because he works for the Smithsonian.
No. That's John.
Oh, okay.
This is the guy that has the body.
Oh, that. Okay. Sorry. Franklin.
And basically, Henson dodged for this why he said he had withdrawn the original body.
Okay.
So he said that Napier had gone and seen one of the display bodies.
That's why. And so, okay, that's why he said it was fake. Because it was fake. It was on display. It wasn't the real one. All right.
Mostly from fear of being found guilty of killing what might be a form of human.
Mm, okay, yeah.
Which happened.
Yeah.
There was an investigation for a murder.
Uh-oh.
So, and replaced the one on display with a model. He said he had taken the real one.
Mm-hmm.
And put it back in a hidden location,
mm-hmm.
the basement of his house.
Right.
No joke.
Oh, yeah.
And so he said he put it because there were several entities that were going to send him to prison for killing a guy.
So he could just say, no, look, it's fake.
Yeah, that one's fake. I have the real one hidden. So, yeah. And replace it with a model. Sanderson supposed this by saying the specimen examined by Napier was obviously different from the original one him and Hoovelman had examined.
Okay.
Which, from the sketches, I think is accurate. I'm not saying they're both real or they're both fake or what, you know, I don't know. But from the sketches,
mm-hmm.
it looks like Hoovelman and Sanderson had seen at least a different model than what Napier had seen.
And here's a theory, too. What if, what if when they started, they worked really hard on the first one. Let's just say it is fake. Just go out in there and just follow this path. They built or constructed a really good looking one that looks very real. And they start parading it around and realize, oh, it's making us a lot of money, a lot of attention. Come on, we need another one. We got other states to hit up. And then they start, all right, pump this one out real fast. And now they got two running.
The next paragraph. You got it. He did it.
Foreshadowing.
He did that, yes.
Okay.
He 100% started making more bodies, and the Minnesota Iceman would show up in two different places at the same time.
Same time, okay.
So let's talk about that. So supposedly different model. Photos show over time, because there's tons of photos of this thing. You can look it up. There's tons of photos. But over the years, the form of the face and the body varied a little bit.
Okay.
So they try to get it pretty close.
Yeah.
And it would vary a little bit. In some photos, the mouth was closed, and others it was open, clearly revealing components of large teeth. Interesting. The chiclet teeth.
Like, yeah. I mean, we've heard that before.
Maybe there was more than one model. Other models looked more realistic than others, but it also seems possible that the model used by Henson was defrosted and frozen again each time for its annual outing. This would also make sense. So there was a chance that it was one model that he was defrosting. Let's say it's fake. It was a chance there was one model he was defrosting and refreezing.
Right.
And putting it roughly back in the same. Or that it was multiple models going around. Or that there was a real one and a fake one.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything. There all could be the hundreds options. Of things.
Yes.
The skeptical view of the Minnesota Iceman has always been that it was a hoax. The long, long tradition of displaying dynamic, memorable sideshow exhibits implied to be real. In 2003, what appeared to be original and genuine article was offered for sale online.
Okay.
You could buy the Minnesota Iceman on eBay.
For real, it was eBay?
I think it was, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. It doesn't say here in this article.
It's probably
I don't
Etsy.
Think they want to.
No, I'm just kidding.
2013?
13 or 3?
13.
Oh, then, yeah, it could be Etsy.
Etsy wasn't around in 2013.
Who says?
I just did.
You don't know. You're not the authority on Etsy.
I guess that's fair. I just don't think it was. I feel like that was like a late teens
No,
thing.
Come on. It's been around forever.
In 2013, what appeared to be the original and genuine article was offered for sale online. Today, the Minnesota Iceman is now owned by Steve Bustill, the Museum of Weird in Austin, Texas, and certainly looks identical to the original specimen discussed in illustrations by Hoovelman and Sanderson. Its hoax nature doesn't really leave Hoovelman and Sanderson looking like credible scientists by most people's beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
What makes the Minnesota Iceman case especially interesting is the context of cryptozoology as a whole and how it interprets by supposed of its reality. Thanks to Hoovelman's influence, the concept of dark-furred Asian crypto-humans was an upturned note with an upturned nose, distinctive facial features, hand and foot anatomy, and barrel-shaped body caught on. So Hoovelman really tried to do this well. The Orang Pendek is kind of like the basic thing, or like the Vietnamese rock apes.
Yeah.
Kind of how we describe them, the short Bigfoots.
Okay.
You know, when we talk about those guys, they're not really, 6 foot is kind of the top out.
Yeah. They're not these giants that.
Roughly what the Iceman was.
Okay.
5.5, 6 foot tall.
Just normal human dude height.
Crypto-human researchers Hamlet Luce Wolfsus argued in 1994 that the image from the ancient art walls were consistent with the description of these creatures. And he gave the name Homo Proangus, like that Hoovelman gave Minnesota Iceman, has been influenced throughout human history. Basically, keeps putting it up there. Now, before I keep going with some of the Homo, I can't even say Proangus stuff, I want to go back, and like I said, it's hard, convoluted. So the body thing, right?
What thing about it?
With why did Henson say that I had to hide the original?
Oh, okay.
Two different things happen. The first one is the Canadian government said, and once again, this is the convoluted side of this story, that the Canadian government had said he did not shoot and kill it in Minnesota. Okay. He had shot and killed it.
In Canada. And drug it across country lines.
And brought it to the United States.
That's illegal.
Now, this was a problem when Henson took it on a sideshow back to Canada.
Uh-oh.
They tried to detain it. And it wasn't for a congressman that Henson had known. Basically called him and begged him, like, hey, don't let him take, they're going to take my, you know, they're going to take my...
My Bigfoot.
They're going to take my Bigfoot. And he called, and basically the congressman was like, you know, this would be very poor form, blah, blah, blah. They let him take it, but they said if he ever brought it back to Canada, they would be keeping it because it's a national treasure.
Yeah, that's insane.
So that's one reason he said he hid the body, because he said the people from Canada were coming back trying to steal it.
Oh, wow.
And they were on it, like, he had caught people on his property, trying to break into the facility it was housing. He had caught people cutting the power to ruin the coolers it was kept in.
And it was Canadians?
Yeah. Dark Canadians.
Wow. Who would have thought they were capable of such things?
North and South Dakotans.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. It all adds up.
So he was saying that that's why he had taken the original, he had hidden it in a facility, made the latex model, because you can find that he was detained by the Canadian custodies.
Uh-huh.
They were going to keep the body.
Yep.
Until the congressman, I can't remember. I found it.
Was it Thomas Massey?
Yeah, it was Thomas Massey. Now,
1960s, well, 70s.
Technically, with how long
no,
people in Congress him. Are in career.
Well, that's true, but he's not old enough for that yet.
No, it was probably Biden. I don't know.
He would have been in Congress still.
He was. He yeah. Radical racial jungle.
Yes. No, he didn't want his kids growing up.
Yeah, with radical, black people.
Yeah. Yes, he said that.
Anyways. No,
good,
so.
Good man.
They were going to keep him. They were going to keep the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they basically.
Biden got involved.
Well, you're not allowed to ever bring this back to Canada. We will keep it. This is your one time.
Yep.
We're doing it as a favor.
Yep.
And then they supposedly, and I don't know if it was actually like, and this is his story, right?
Mm.
The Canadian government or locals, it felt like it was, you know, it belonged to them, or it was like,
yeah.
Maybe they had, you know, a local town in Canada. I mean, he's in Minnesota. It's right there.
It's right there. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, the town had been like, well, yeah, we had a Bigfoot shot and killed here.
Yeah, where'd he go?
Or, you know, it could have been a local Bigfoot. I mean, how many times have we talked about with these people having, like, local relationships?
Yeah, they know.
And then it was their friend, essentially.
Right.
That this hunter had walked up and just shot and killed.
Shot the head and drug him off.
Yeah.
Threw him in his cooler.
That was one reason. Next reason was Napier's fault.
Okay. Now, this Napier was the guy.
The Smithsonian primatologist.
Yes, yes.
Now, Bremer, he said it was very fake.
Absolutely. It's latex.
Very fake. He suggested, though, that the FBI get involved because he was suspicious that it was a human corpse inside a latex Bigfoot suit. Because he said the teeth looked kind of real. Like, there was pieces of it that kind of looked real.
Yeah.
So he suggested that it was that.
Mm.
And then immediately, the FBI is like, well, first off, the FBI publicly said, no, if it, you know, it doesn't bother us. We are going to give this to local law enforcement.
Right, yeah.
And the local law enforcement did do an investigation. And basically, that's where he said he made the latex model and hid the real one. So they're like, see, it's don't tell anybody, but it's fake, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
You're going to ruin my sideshow money, that hustle. So
that's what I was saying. There was a lot of things. There were dozens of police reports of people coming out trying to steal it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason, just like general, just people like, wanting the thing. Well, he got offered tens of thousands of dollars at sideshows for people to buy it.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, it went underground, and the guy that owns the weird museum, which Patreon listener Bob has been to. Remember, he sent us the postcard from
That's
there.
Right. That's right.
So they have the Iceman.
Is that Oaky Bob?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So it's there. You can go look at it. I think it's still on display.
Hmm.
Last time I seen.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's one thing I wanted to come back to before we continue with some of the scientific stuff. That it was a little weird that there were people trying to actively steal it. That's, you can prove yeah. that.
Which, and, you know, what's that from? If people, is it because it was real?
I mean, we know Bigfoot people.
You know, that's what I'm saying, yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be real for people to still want to come steal it.
No, it doesn't mean it's real. It doesn't mean it's real.
As long as they believe it's real,
They will murder you for it. Yes. I know several people that I would not tell I had a Bigfoot in a freezer.
Absolutely, yeah. No, bad news.
All right. So what do you think about all that?
I mean, I think we're probably in agreement there. It's just an odd, a lot of odd things adding up together to create this story. But I mean, as of now, I can't make heads or tails of it, but I'm still kind of leaning. It's probably fake.
Well, I mean, it's hold on to fake. That. So keep in mind where several of the stories said it came from China. It came from Vietnam, came from Russia.
Japan.
I don't remember. Oh, the Japanese whaling vessel. I'm mm-hmm. like, well, they found that in the ocean.
Well, the Japanese found it.
So Hoovelman basically made this archetype of this creature, saying this specific thing is from Asia.
Okay.
From the what is that would be? The Southeast Asia, you know, Vietnam, the Philippines, like that area.
Okay.
So this started this scientific name he gave it, the Homo Parangus. They started really, really researching this, and then they found all these local legends that fit a very, very, very similar creature.
Okay.
The Asian creature in this concept was possibly representative of some sort of animal. A large number of Wildman reports were collected from Caucasian people visiting Western Mongolia, East Crypto hominoid researcher, the Boris we mentioned earlier. I'm not even going to try to say his last name again. Dermonte Bellevin, Marie Jenny Kaufman are said to have uncanny similarities to Homo Prongus that Hoovelman had described.
Wow.
So these guys took Hoovelman's research and really started going boots on the ground.
Yeah. Researching it, breaking it down.
And they were describing a very, very similar thing to the Iceman. Mm. Even the foot pads. So it doesn't, the Iceman didn't have typical Bigfoot feet.
Okay.
They were kind of like displayed foots.
Okay.
So when we have what we believe is credible Bigfoot cast, you know, the toes are kind of there, but they are splayed more than our toes, but these are like fully splayed feet.
Have you ever seen the photo of, I think it's an uncontacted tribe.
It is the Filipino, I think, one of the Philippine islands.
Yeah.
That they have their big toe almost looks dislocated.
Yeah.
It's from generations of working in the jungle.
And I think they said they're really good at climbing trees and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But their toe splay is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome.
So they fit more with that. So the foot that Hooverman had described in the Iceman case fit
splayed human foot.
Southeast Asian Bigfoot like creature.
Gotcha. Okay.
More than any local Bigfoot.
Okay.
Also, now I mentioned the Iceman has visible genitalia.
That's right.
That's something we don't see a lot in North American Bigfoot.
No, we don't.
When people even describe masculine Bigfoot, they really don't describe those features. It's a very common descriptive feature in these Bigfoot-like creatures of the Asian region that we're talking about.
Okay.
The males have very similar to the Iceman, where you can, it's visible. It's very clear, males and females.
Pronounced member.
But they're less sexually dimorphic everywhere else.
Okay.
So they're much more, they're almost always built like paddy, like barrels.
Okay.
Even the male, female, there's no these massive shoulders with we see with what we believe North American Sasquatch is more attuned to. They're sexually dimorphic.
Right.
So it'd be like gorillas versus humans.
Okay.
Which would make sense for what we kind of talk about with what Bigfoot may be versus what these may be in actually people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have much more human characteristics than they do of what Sasquatch appears to do.
Mm-hmm.
Upturned noses, people, there's all kinds of groups of people that have the more upturned nose. I mean, even with the twin girls, you know, one has a little bit more of an upturned nose than the other. Like,
right, yeah.
So you can, that's genetic.
Hmm.
But everything from North Pakistan, there was a herpetologist named Jody Manger that had an encounter with one of these wild men and drew it. And herpetologist, reptile, amphibian. And it looks just like the Iceman. She didn't know anything about the Iceman.
Where was this?
This was in Pakistan.
Okay.
Northern Pakistan.
It's Middle East.
Mm-hmm. And they called it now it's called the Pongid Man. Which is this dark furred creature.
Okay.
But yeah. So the Iceman, whether it was real or not, split off this whole heavy duty research into this area of the world. Obviously, the research stopped pretty soon after Vietnam Wars, wars in the Middle East, China, like that part of the world kind of got a hotbed for a while for European and American researchers to go in and work.
Well, this ain't good. Are they starting wars to distract us from the discovery of like, hairy hominid creatures?
So, because
if that's the case, I feel like we're on the precipice, you know, of the next big discovery. Maybe that's why they're riling up all these wars worldwide. They're already ready to throw us off the scent the moment it gets revealed or someone shows up at a traveling circus with an Iceman frozen.
So I really don't know about... I don't know. So I got a bunch of options of what this could be. Once again, guys at home, do your own research on any of these topics we talk about. You know, obviously.
Absolutely.
I went into this thinking it was real, and now I don't know how I feel.
Yeah.
After all the research.
Yeah.
There's enough there where I think the guy's story changing really, really bugs me constantly.
Me too, yes.
And I don't know if it was a fear reaction to where, like I said, the Canadian government almost took the thing from him, had people trying to break in. The FBI got involved, and I didn't really mention this, but there was claims that the FBI had made threats against him. There's claims that NAPR had made threats against him. Like, they're
Smithsonian making threats? No.
I mean, he would have just disappeared. Like, they don't make threats.
No, they don't. They just
You go in the hole with the body.
Yeah, in the back of the warehouse.
Yeah.
You get shoved in the filing cabinet.
NAGPRA. You end up in a NAGPRA hole.
That's right. That hole is big.
It's big. I really don't know, but this is such a non-talked about, but turning point in cryptozoology. It really, really hurt Sanderson and Hoovelman's careers.
Yeah.
It really upset both of them after. Sanderson was much, much, much more vocal about it, saying that the one that they had been shown was not the one on public display,
yeah.
Not the one Napier had seen.
Yeah.
And Hoovelman was singing the same tune, but immediately started trying to just turn it around as best. So very different men with how they viewed things, how they reacted with things, and they really didn't work together a lot after this.
Okay.
At least publicly. There's plenty of stories saying that they would still talk and they would still do stuff, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, once a relationship, or especially a working relationship, you know, gets soured a little bit, it's really hard to... If you have no ties to that person, to jump back into them and work together, it's... I can see it.
It's... Yeah.
And that's what makes this difficult... This story difficult, too, because there's just so... They're two huge, prominent names.
I mean, very... I think very credible. I really do.
100%.
Personally, as from my background, Hoovelman's always been closer to my heart than Sanderson. Mm-hmm. But we're still mega figures, and Sanderson had backed. We talked about it in the famous or the Fathers of Cryptozoology. He had backed a couple other bad horses too.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't be perfect all the time.
And I think
we're all just human.
So I really don't know. There's tons and tons of stuff extra with this thing mm-hmm. that is you cannot validate. You cannot validate. Like I said, Hoovelman's book is pretty good, but it's written by Hoovelman.
Right, so it's going to be naturally biased.
Yeah. So let's get into what this Iceman could be.
Okay.
First big one is a hoax.
Yeah.
It was a fake body, and Hoovelman and Sanderson really wanted it.
I was going to say, not that they fell for it, but...
They really wanted it to be real.
Yeah.
And they keep in mind it was under ice, so they're still, you know, they're looking at it through.
But they can't touch it. Yeah. And you can't examine it as close, as thorough as you want.
And they just really wanted it to be real.
Yeah. You're in this field for, so you coined the term.
40 years. This has been about 20 years. They started the field.
Right.
These two guys.
I was going to say, you coined the term.
Hardcore. And now you got a body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a song that talks about it. It's hard to see the red flags when you're wearing rose-colored glasses.
That's right. Yep. That's true.
You know, you want it so bad that you ignore the red flags, you ignore the story change, and mm-hmm. you ignore certain things because it's there. I mean,
it's what you want to see.
And it's very hard to stop in the moment and just be like, okay, let's pick this apart and find out why it could not be. It's
zoom
very hard.
Out, yeah. Playing devil's advocate for something you worked so hard to find.
It's very hard. So
the holy grail.
What do you think about, not the extra things, but just the hoax?
That like it started off as just a hoax.
It's just always been a hoax.
Yeah, from day one start. Part of me feels like, yeah, that's probably what it was. Just because of the story changing.
It hurts.
It does. I don't like saying it, but you know what? I just kind of think it was. And I don't want to admit it, but I just know from what us, you know, talking to enough people, not only is this a weird enough field, it's something you really can't measure, and it's almost a gut feeling. When hearing someone's reaction or just seeing them talk about it, you just kind of know if the person's telling the truth or not, just the way they tell it.
I wish I could meet Henson to get that feeling off him. That's the guy that had the body.
Okay. The guy parading it around.
And like I said, Hoovelman and Sanderson really wanted it. Napier, that was his job, in my opinion,
was to
discredit everything.
Right. Like a good Smithsonian boy.
Yes. You know, I mean, if you're new to this show, please go back and listen to some of our Smithsonian episodes. I think there's very different, like we talk about front of house, back of house.
Yeah.
When you go to the Smithsonian, the people there are not bad.
Right.
It's a very tippy top, and the heads of it just have destroyed hundreds of careers.
Time Police.
Lives.
Bones.
Time Police episodes never even came out yet.
Well.
I don't even know if it will.
Ooh.
It may be lost by the Time Police.
They may have zapped it.
So
only time will tell.
This hurts me. This really does, because I went into it really believing it was real, and I think
but it still could be.
Now that's my next one.
Yeah,
but I think the scale has tilted a lot for me today doing this research.
To come back around to
is because it hurt to research it.
Mm-hmm.
It physically hurt to try to look at and figure out and try to pull apart and get dates right. And it just was like the story is written by a madman. And is that on purpose? You know?
Well, over time, it could have been rewritten, reworded by a madman.
I mean, they're dead. Everybody's dead now.
Right. So, but the articles you find, you know, everything retelling the story. Like, for example, when a major thing happens in the world today and a news, you know, agency covers it, reports on it, every single major news outlet, like major ones, you know, not just the little guy, the ones that actually tell the truth, the big giant corporation news agencies all just recycle that same story, same headline, same article. You know, it's repeated. And after one reports it, the rest latch on and then immediately. So that becomes the story. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's the truth, but that's all people see. And so they immediately think, okay, this is the truth. This is what's going on. This is everything that happened. Obviously, all these major news agencies are covering the same thing, reporting it the same way. So that has to be the only way this thing happened. When really any story that you dig into should have nuances or a little, you know, differences. If you're really reporting it independently and not just piggybacking off somebody else's work. And, you know, this could be something similar of that, where one thing gets reported and then every major thing reports the same thing. And if that one initial report was just slightly off, you know, it just game of telephone is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse as it's continually reported or repeated by people that didn't actually physically see it, touch it, or smell it, the cracked glass. Ugh, smells like, well, I don't even want to repeat that story.
Well, wet latex doesn't smell great.
Oh, I know. It just smells like somebody having a bad accident in a bathroom and just.
So the next one I have is hoax and real one was hidden due to theft and threat.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it matters. It's really hard to look at, and maybe Bernard and Sanderson were right, you know, that they were shown a real carcass.
And then
due to theft attempts, let's just say theft attempts alone, because that's documented, probably hundreds of theft attempts, you know, to steal this thing from this guy's, get a, you know, a little facility built by his house just for the refrigerators.
Right. What if he did, though? What if it did get stolen?
Oh, I didn't even think about that, and he just played it off like, just, nope, I still have it.
My cash cow is, what? Hurry, I mean, stat. Yeah,
the money alone, I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd be motivated to create a new one if it got stolen, fast as possible. Just throw it out there. It just so happens to be when the, like, what if Smithsonian stole it the week before that guy's supposed to come see it? And then they stole it and replaced it.
Now, there's some, like, I didn't include a lot of stuff because it was like, he said, she said. There's tons with the story. If anybody Googles this, you'll find it. Also, there's a hockey team now called the Minnesota Icemen, which makes researching this 10 times more difficult.
Which I think they do that stuff on purpose.
I think they do.
Yes.
And it's like the town over.
So now that even points me, now that's pushing me back the other way. And I'm back on team real.
No, there's stories that the Smithsonian try to pay him first for it, and then they ridicule them. And then they either took it by force, or he was highly advised for his safety to, you know, get rid of it.
I'm almost back on team real.
Now, that's my next one, is government threat. That the FBI did get involved with this case. The Canadian government did get involved with this. Mm-hmm. And the Smithsonian was heavily involved with this.
And, you know, at the end of the day, our governments are working. They all work together. I don't care what anyone says or thinks.
Especially Canada?
Yeah, exactly. We're working together in tandem.
The only reason Canada is still there, sorry, Canadian listeners, is because it's next to us.
Yeah, I don't know.
Russia? Russia ate Canada a long time ago if Alaska wasn't there.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not joking. The Canadian military is just not nearly as strong as the U.S. military.
Well, no one's is.
No, but I'm just...
Not even close.
Canada gets a lot of freedoms because it's...
Sure.
It's protected.
Sure. I think it's because they're just good people up there. You know, there's...
I love the Canadian listeners. Yeah,
they're just good people and they're protected. Well, our government, the only government I hate as much as ours. It's just awful. They work together. The only thing governments work together and constantly communicate on is how to suppress the citizens of their country. And they're all just, you know, shuffling notes around. Oh, what worked for you guys today? How did you suppress your citizens? How are you controlling them for the future? That's how our governments work together. So you know, that's probably, there's now I'm thinking, okay, this probably was a real thing. So now we're calling in all the guns. Okay, we got the FBI, probably CIA involved in this. We got to get this thing back.
Guys, you know, like, what? Dude. That was a weird one.
What?
I never, because I go down some pretty deep rabbit holes for these episodes.
Uh-huh.
And I go to Reddit and most time if there's somebody that has a theory, I'll be like, all right, I'll read the theory. I don't have, there's no proof of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one you never seen mentioned.
What's that?
The CIA.
And being involved?
Yeah.
Well, could be. They're very covert.
Now, the FBI director at the time, and I forgot, I don't have his name in front of me, but he did mention this case.
Hmm. This is back in the early 70s. I have no idea who that was. Oh. Mid 70s. I don't know.
74, something like that.
I don't know. Wasn't Bush, was it?
So government threat. I mean, that he was highly advised to either make a rubber suit or give them the real one.
Right.
Or
they gave him the real one. They or the rubber one.
Any of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's
kind of like the New Mexico, Roswell, when the
The fake the weather balloon
after
that was
the fact.
They did that to their own general.
That's what I'm saying. They just replaced it, and now you have to tell this is the real one. You have to. This is it.
Have we done a Roswell episode?
With that fake balloon or the real one, and then clearly changed his statement and told a false statement.
I know we've talked about that, but I don't know if we've ever done an actual Roswell episode.
I don't know. If you're listening, let us know.
We have no idea. There's 300 something. Yeah. I have no idea. Somebody messaged us about an old episode. I'm like,
I know we've.
I don't know.
I definitely know we've talked about it plenty, but I don't know if we can commit a whole episode to it.
So I got three kind of next, like three of these, three are lumped in. It was a real Bigfoot.
Okay.
It was a real Bigfoot he shot in Minnesota or Canada, and that's why Canada was furious about it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? It was, maybe there was, it was a real Bigfoot. Let's say it was real. Let's get rid of the hoax.
Bigfoot or just a Bigfoot type thing?
Whatever Bigfoot is.
Okay.
Here in the States.
Yeah.
They shot a Bigfoot-like thing in the States.
I'm going to say no.
No?
Nope.
What about Neanderthal?
It's probably more likely, in my opinion.
This is from, like, Russia, northern Canada, something?
I would say that's more likely just because I just don't think you can shoot a Bigfoot and freeze it.
And that may be why the governments were so... Because they killed a guy.
Yeah.
Neanderthal is a human. It is a guy.
They were in some illegal hunting expedition and...
Well, no, they may have shot at a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And then when they got up close, like, oh.
Well, yeah.
That's a dude.
Hmm.
And well, how many people have we talked about that have, you know, had Bigfoot in the scope and couldn't shoot
right.
one? Because it turned and looked at him and they're like, that's a guy.
Right, yeah.
That's just a guy with a lot of hair.
Yeah. And no way you can pull the trigger unless you're a... lifeless, cold.
That or they're coming for
demon
you.
Demon human.
You know, or when you're scared, I mean, that's different. That's when you're different. Scared, that's different.
Yeah, that's different.
But I mean, how many people, like, we talked about the, and I won't name them. Well, we talked about that group that's so focused to just killing a Bigfoot to save them, essentially. This is their beliefs. And the one guy was a retired sniper.
Yep.
Confirmed
military.
Kills, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dead. He had one dead to rights, going to kill it. And he's, I couldn't do it because it just looked like an innocent guy.
Yeah.
It looked at me and it was just, it did nothing to me. I had plenty. I just couldn't do it.
Yep.
So, I mean, what if that, you know, they killed this thing, put it on display, and then they were like, oh, it's, you know, they knew it was a guy the whole time.
Hmm. Just feel like they wouldn't put it on display if they knew it was a
money.
Guy. I still.
It's under ice.
Yeah.
And then the Canadian government's like, is that Ted?
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, not Ted Watkins. He's in the ice.
No, you know, just like I said, some local group in Canada was like, you know, may have had contact with, you know, some Neanderthals or whatever. They were highly intelligent. The joke of Neanderthals is really misstated. They are very intelligent. They had high-speed drills way before Cro-Magnon did. Like, they did stuff. They were us, you know. They're us as much as anything else.
Yeah. Human.
Human. I'm a human. So that's one. Neanderthal, Bigfoot. Now, this is the one, if it's real, I'm on the boat. I'm thinking like 60% just hoax.
Okay.
Maybe 65.
Okay.
I think it's more likely a hoax than it isn't.
Okay.
This is the one, if it's real, I think it is.
Okay. What you got?
A dead rock ape.
Oh, okay.
Right time, right place, right description. Like we talked about, tons and tons of these other cryptozoologists jumped on after this, and we're finding that this fit the description of rock apes, fit the description from the Philippine Islands, fit the description of these, Southeast Asia. like these Southeast Asia hominids.
Right.
Which seem to be more apt to be hairy men. Not Bigfoot, not whatever, you know. That
something
thing.
Different.
They seem, and the illustrations of drawing describe them as having man's faces, you know, hair, mm-hmm. genitals exposed, the weird hands, but, they, you know, having hands. If it's real, I think it was a rocket, maybe killed in Vietnam, and they brought it back, and they froze it, and because he was stationed in Vietnam, he may have made up the private owner thing, because, you know, he may have felt it was guy, you know, it was the horror of Vietnam. It may have felt that, but he wanted to make money off it. You know, right, these guys yeah. came back with nothing.
Well, you probably weren't allowed to bring something back.
Okay. No, they send stuff back all the time if you could afford it.
Okay.
But they talked about that the people from Vietnam, well, maybe the something. Soldiers from Vietnam came back to nothing.
Absolutely. The government didn't help them at all.
Well, like I said, the horrible well, treatment of like my grandpa.
Yeah. I mean,
like, well, they sold everything because they thought he was dead.
Yeah. How awful is that?
They came back and they sold all of his cars and his fishing poles and his boat. Like, because they're like, oh, you died. We thought you were
just
dead.
Just figured you're dead. They just sell your stuff. That's insane.
So, I don't know. What if it's something with that? I mean, really, if it is real, and I'm 35% chance I think this case is real.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a rock ape. I do not think it was a Bigfoot. I do not think it was Neanderthal. It was very small for those things.
Like, I could see that too, being why you would change your story in the beginning if you don't want to admit where you brought it, you shot it and brought it home from.
Well, he may have illegally shipped it too. He
That's
may
what
have
I'm
said
saying,
it was,
yeah.
it was spoils of war.
Yeah.
It wasn't a body.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he may have paid off enough people or, you know, got enough people drunk to ship it back on ice.
It could have just been a Vietnamese man. He glued hair on and froze him.
Could have been a hairy Vietnamese guy.
Or that too. Like the guy that was eating the armadillos and was that Florida?
That was a Vietnamese man and it was in Florida. Yet.
Yeah.
Little pigs.
It's like him. Could have been him.
Could have been him. I don't think it was him because that was in the 90s or 2000s.
Yeah, it's more recent. Well, you know, he escaped.
So what's your final thoughts on the Minnesota Iceman?
Oh.
Give me your percentages.
Oh, percentages, huh?
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, I guess you just did it, right?
Minus, I'm going to say
65%
fake. It was a hoax. Hoax from the ground up. 35%. Something else, whether he was shot at Bigfoot in Canada, just because of how many legal figures are involved.
Yeah.
That, it, like you said, you know, that kind of pushes me back the other way a little bit.
Right, yeah.
That, you know, Smithsonian is, we've talked about it hundreds of times, nefarious for just destroying every bit. They don't care they really don't care about the fake stuff.
No.
That only helps them.
Yeah. They don't care about actual history
so
either.
So the involvement that they had with this...
It's like red flag.
But for the other way, that this there was some nugget.
Right, yeah, some nugget of truth. It's either there was some nugget of truth or it was displayed in such a way that it caught enough attention that they thought it involved truth.
Yeah.
And until they got involved and realized what was going on, you know, then they played with it maybe. I don't know. Maybe led people on. I don't know.
So give me your percentages.
I'm going to say probably... 75-80% hoax.
That's, oh, big number.
Yeah, I'm going big time. I think it is. I just think it is. And I think the wool was pulled over Ivan's and Bernard's eyes and just because they wanted it so bad. I just do. Just, what?
Took me a second. Ivan and Bernard. It just sounds like it's so fake.
Oh,
but
I know.
Because I just, everything is always their last names.
Hoovelman and Sanderson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because well, Ivan T. Sanderson, I didn't cross my head his first name was Ivan.
Oh, it's just Ivan T. Almost.
It's either Ivan T. Sanderson or Sanderson.
Right, yeah. Well, no, or me and them are on first name basis now. What's...
Dead.
Yeah, dead. No, we communicate through spirit boxes.
I think Bernard died in our lifetimes. I don't think Sanderson died in our lifetimes.
Oh, okay. Well, they visit me in dreams, and they tell there me the go. Truth. And then they probe
in
me.
In the Pyro Mountains.
Yeah. Then I wake up sore.
Do you really think it's 80% fake?
I do. I think it's a hoax. I just do. But the part that leaves me a little
makes
glimmer.
Makes me feel bad.
I know. I'm not saying it feels good saying it. It doesn't. Because I want to believe it's still real to me. Dang it.
Just makes me feel sad.
That was a wrestling reference. But I just, with them being involved, Smithsonian especially, there's something there that makes me just like, maybe there's something about this that was true. But yeah, I believe they probably definitely made a fake and they probably displayed that, especially since Sanderson and Hulman said, like, that's not the one we saw. So there's something weird. I don't know. It could be a hoax. I'm leaning more towards hoax. But there's that slim chance that the Minnesota Iceman was real.
This makes me sad.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like these episodes.
It's not the best.
I don't like giving hard opinions, but this one just, it's just the convolutedness of it, whether that's on purpose or not. Researching it is very, very, very hard.
I think so.
And like I said, I highly suggest everybody, you know what, Bernard's book, buy Bernard's book. I have tons of his books. They're all great. Mm-hmm. Just remember, it's written about, you know, about Bernard's research from Bernard.
Right, yeah.
So you're getting that view. I don't know. There may have been a different one they were shown. It's probably a hoax, and it makes me sad. It really does.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, let us know. Maybe this will be the first Spotify poll. I've never done one.
Ooh, there we go. That's a good idea.
If I remember.
Yeah, we'll try.
Yeah. I have been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been J-Clone 71.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.